Hello and welcome to Radio Heteroglossia. I'm Anna Fonseca and our guest today is Dr. Radhna Ghosh. Dr. Radhna Ghosh is a professor in Integrated Studies in Education at McGill University in Montreal, Canada. Today, we will be talking about her article entitled Multiculturalism in a Comparative Perspective, Australia, Canada, and India, published in 2018 in the academic journal Canadian Ethnic Studies. In her article, Dr. Ghosh traces the trajectory of multiculturalism in Australia, India, and Canada. Dr. Ghosh, welcome and thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
In your article, you point out the variety of meanings given to the term multiculturalism in Australia, Canada, and India, and how it emerged in 1941 as a response to a form of nationalism.
Yes.
I wonder if you can talk more about this.
In the beginning, all these countries, especially Canada and Australia, were very homogenous in the sense that they were British or French, but mostly British population in these countries. And so that anybody else who came had to become like them. It was a policy of assimilation. At that time, they wanted everything for England, both Canada and Australia. So this form of English nationalism, people said that, you know, already by 41, there were other groups here. And so that the only white English group is on one side of the spectrum and people are coming in. So they're moving to another side. That is, yes, we have English people here and they are the majority, undoubtedly, but we have other people here who are building the society, who are building Canada, who are building Australia. They have to be recognized too. So that's when the term multiculturalism first started. And this policy of assimilation had to change when they had to get immigrants from other countries, other nationalities. And so when these people came in and they were not treated equally in society, they had to do something about having some equality in a democracy. If they call themselves democratic countries, one of the basic tenets of democracy is equality. Equality of opportunity, equality of rights, equality in dignity, which is the introduction to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which was first drafted by a Canadian professor at McGill. So that is saying that human beings are equal in dignity and rights is the basic tenet of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. But we all know that while they are born equal in dignity and rights, they are not born equal in many other ways. For example, race, gender, there are so many other differences when people are born. So in order to give them the equality of dignity and rights, they had to have some policies at the level of the government to manage the diversity in different countries. Because otherwise, some people are getting all the advantages and some people are not. So multiculturalism is a way to bring in everybody and give them equal opportunity. It is not about maintaining cultures only.
You certainly mentioned in your article how, with the scale of cultural interaction brought about by globalization, this idea of a homogeneous society wasn't viable anymore. That leads me to my second question. How have globalization and neoliberalism influenced current understandings of multiculturalism in these three countries?
Well, globalization means a lot of displacement of people. People are moving from one country to another. And of course, now with the crisis in displacement due to wars, so with the movement of people, the intermixing of cultures challenges these notions of homogeneity because the people are getting to know other cultures. They're picking up things from other cultures. Culture is in a state of flux. It's fluid. It's changing. It's shifting. It's hybrid because there are intermarriages. Sometimes I have in my class students who write about grandmothers from one place, grandfathers from another place, the mother is from one place, the father is from another culture. All these mixing of cultures is happening very much now. Not only because people can travel very fast, they can be in different places within a day, but because people are getting to know each other. And so multiculturalism is not just many cultures, it's super diversity of cultures.
Mm-hmm. And that's something that we can attribute to globalization with this encounter among different cultures. But in terms of neoliberalism, you'd make that point in your article how it has somehow influenced understandings of multiculturalism. What is the impact that neoliberalism has had on understandings of multiculturalism?
Neoliberalism is all about markets. And so when they see diversity, you'll see advertisements that are focused on different groups of people. They are commodifying that difference for economic gain. Not because they want to give equal opportunity, but because they want to sell to these people. They are targeting certain groups in ads for different products. So they are commodifying difference to their benefit, not because they want to give equal opportunity to these people, but because they want to sell to different targeted groups.
Mm-hmm. I want to come back to the point that you made earlier about equality in terms of those variety of meanings given to multiculturalism. So you do acknowledge that in your article how multiculturalism means different things for different people. But would you say that equality was like a common denominator in their definitions or conceptualizations of multiculturalism for Canada, India, and Australia?
I think that certainly they wanted to give more opportunities to the people who have been historically disenfranchised or marginalized. Because they know that when you have disenfranchised people, marginalized groups of people in society, that society is in danger of conflict. And so they wanted to bring these people into the mainstream. But certainly, I don't think that all of them had equality in their mind, but they wanted to manage the diversity so that all people have something. But a more just society is what Canada was looking for, and to give more opportunity to those who haven't had opportunity. And in that sense, yes, less inequality, we should say.
Mm-hmm. And that is interesting because you know how Australia, Canada, and India, well, especially the first two in Australia and Canada, their immigration policies were very racist before that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what happened that understanding changed? What happened when they start thinking more about human rights? You locate that during the post-war period. Was that because of the wars? What prompted their change of approach towards minorities?
I think two things. One is, as you said, the post-war focus on human rights because of what had happened in the Second World War and how certain groups of people had been targeted. At that time, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights in 1948 was very, very important. All the countries of the world came together. That's why they said in the preamble of the human rights that human beings are equal in dignity and in rights. That was one reason. And the second reason is that they could not keep them white anymore. White Australia policy could not be kept anymore because they needed people from other countries in order to do all the work in their countries. They had to fill up their countries with immigrants. They could not only bring white British people, which they wanted to do. For a long time they did, but then they had to invite other immigrants to come in because they had to have the labor force, they had to have the professionals, all of them who were from different countries, because they needed an immigration policy that would bring in other people from other cultures. So all these people, when they came, that had to change. Now, Canada never had in writing white Canada policy, although in practice, that is what it was. Australia had in writing a white Australia policy, but that had to change. And there are instances in Canada and certainly in Australia where groups of people had been barred from coming into the country.
One of the reasons that you give to the initial racist policies, especially in Canada and Australia, is the fact that they were influenced by the colonization of the British, right? Like they were really, you may say, racist. And that was something that Canada and Australia inherited. But at the same time, India was colonized by the English.
Yes.
So what made India different?
India's position is quite different because India's distinction between those who have and those who have not, it's within the caste system. So the caste system is a hereditary system where people from a different caste are supposed to be, they're called outcasts. They were called outcasts till Gandhi came and said that they are not outcasts. We cannot call them outcasts because they were Hindus. We want to make them part of the Hindu religion, which they were. So this caste system, it became a cultural system and it kind of penetrated all the religions in India. So that even if they don't have it formally, they have a distinction in terms of people who are born into a caste and born into that family or that group of people, they are of lower caste. And it is those people who have been denied everything historically. During the British period, people who were below the four castes and they did all the manual work, they were not allowed into temples and not allowed to get education and so on and so forth. So they had historically been discriminated. So when India became independent, then they said that we want to give them special privileges because they have had centuries of discrimination. And only now, if we want to bring them into society, we have to give them special privileges. That is why they have the quota system in India, which allows some seats reserved for people from lower castes. But caste system was abolished at independence, but socially people still have that feeling, you know, I mean, legislation cannot change the hearts of people, as Martin Luther King Jr. said. So people are still worried about caste. They still discriminate on caste.
Mm-hmm. And that leads me to my next question. Your article differentiates between being a multicultural society and multiculturalism as an ideology or policy. Mm. Along these lines, you argue that, put on quotes, legislation and constitutional provisions are important so that they safeguard policies. But the issue is with political will to protect the rights of individuals and groups, as well as the ability to implement existing policies. Perhaps more importantly, the need is for change in society's attitudes towards the other. So in this part of your article, you're drawing attention to the gap that exists between theory and practice, specifically in regard to the dissonance that exists between public opinion and public policy about multiculturalism. In other words, between actually being a multicultural society versus having multiculturalism as a policy. I wonder if you can talk more about this.
Yes, a multicultural society is one in which people have the opportunity to compete equally or to exercise equal power in anything in society, in the rewards in society, in all kinds of activities in society. They have equal opportunity. Now, equal opportunity, of course, means something only when your conditions are there. A multicultural society is a fair and just society. Now, does it mean that all the people in that country feel that that is the way it should be? Absolutely not. First, there has to be the political will for the politicians to say that we have a multicultural policy. For example, in Australia, they have been at the federal level, they have had multicultural policies sometimes and no multicultural policies at other times. Although different provinces or states have had their own equal opportunity policies. But the country has never had a legislation on multiculturalism. It is because every government that comes, it has something different. It has a different way of thinking. Now we can see what is happening in the world right now with not only public opinion, but the opinions of certain politicians who can make a big difference to immigration. So it's not only public will, but it's also political will that is important. And Canada is known for its multiculturalism. Why? Because it is not only the first country in the world to have a policy of multiculturalism at the federal level, but it's written into the constitution. In India, the provisions for the lower castes is also written into the constitution. But Australia doesn't have anything written in the constitution. So Canada's immigration policies, how the immigrants are chosen, who gets in, who gets out, all that is dependent on multicultural policy. And so that court cases, immigration, all these things are affected by the policy of multiculturalism. For example, if you have in the school system a question about the school authorities not liking somebody wearing a hijab, and that case will go to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court has judged on those cases and said, we have freedom of religion in a multicultural society. So, yes, that child can wear the hijab if she wants to. You see, because it impacts on all facets of society. But if the political will is not there, so that we can say that from tomorrow we stop all immigration from certain countries, then that will make a big difference because there is no multicultural policy, so nobody can take you to court on that.
Yeah, and definitely political will is a very important first step.
Yeah.
And it creates this sense of protection for immigrants.
Yeah.
But at the same time, similar to what you just mentioned in India, right? Like one of the things that a lot of, for example, immigrants experience in Canada is that dissonance. Some of them don't feel that they belong. When, for example, a naturalized Canadian becomes Canadian, they are still being referred to based on their nationality where they were born, right? When they feel themselves Canadian. So is that same dissonance? So how to deal with that dissonance that exists between public policy and social attitudes? Because that does make integration more difficult for immigrants.
Absolutely. That's a very important point. You know, till the policy of multiculturalism came, and even after that, but till it came, we thought of Canada as having two founding fathers, the French and the English. They didn't even bring in the native groups into the equation. They totally left them out. And they said, we are the founding fathers, the French and the English. It's only when multiculturalism became a policy and then became an act 17 years later that the talk about founding fathers became less so. But people had in their minds that they were the true Canadians, although nobody is a true Canadian from that point of view, except the indigenous people. Everybody has, if your grandfather has not come, his father has come from somewhere else. So everybody has that history. So eventually people understand that they are all from somewhere. So we are all from somewhere. And I think gradually this idea that people have in general is going to fade very soon because they understand that people become Canadians not only by living here for a long time, but because they are contributing to Canadian society.
Mm-hmm. Given some people's relatively lack of understanding about multiculturalism in Canada that you just mentioned, and the dissonance that we see as a result between the immigration policy and social attitudes towards immigration, do you think that the Canadian immigration policy should involve everyone who lives in Canada? whether they are born Canadians, naturalized Canadians, newcomers, immigrants, refugees, because I think that it speaks to something that you very wisely note in your article, and it is the fact that usually the Canadian immigration policy is thought as something that applies only to minorities.
Yes.
Or is the policy meant to involve all people who live in Canada? Or is it that we perhaps need more education about the immigration policy in Canada to understand really what it means and what multiculturalism really means and involves?
Yeah, absolutely. Multiculturalism, when it first came, because of that idea of the founding races, founding nations, we interpret multiculturalism as being the song and the dance routine. That is, the songs and dances of different cultures, the museum approach. That's what multiculturalism felt to be at that time. One problem with our multicultural policy in Canada was that it was never defined. What is multiculturalism was never defined till the act, which brought in a lot of issues on race and discrimination into that act. 1988 is the Multiculturalism Act, and 71 was the multiculturalism policy. So the policy was never defined. So in these 17 years that went past, people just thought of multiculturalism as the policy for ethnics. But actually, multiculturalism is for the society. It's for the host society and how they have to change. And it's for the immigrant societies and how they also have to change. So that there is a third space in between, which is common, which is very, very important that people understand, especially now that there is globalization, that people are thrust with each other. People of different cultures, different religions, we have to understand. We don't need to necessarily agree with them, but we have to understand that they have different ways of doing things, and we have to accept that. And certainly, you know, this Bouchard and Taylor, the commission report, talked about accommodation. And the accommodation is not only the host society's accommodation, but what is the immigrant also going to accommodate? They are in Canada. They're not back in their countries. They have to accommodate. They want to keep their cultures. They can do that. Multiculturalism allows that. But gradually, there's going to be this mixture of cultures, mixture of identities.
Dr. Ghosh, thank you so much for your time and for sharing with us your knowledge and views on this issue.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
The conversation continues. If you have a comment that you would like to contribute to today's discussion, please don't hesitate to leave us your opinions and views on the comment section below this episode. Thanks for listening to Radio Heteroglossia.